On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome to Tuesday. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. For those of you who don't know, I presume most of you do, but The Horn family grows a little bit every day. And that's a good thing. Fair warning. Tonight may be a little tough. There's stuff in the hopper that sort of can't be avoided, and it may prove a little hard to deal with. But you know what? We are, what, fact-based, aren't we? And we do not shrink from dealing with the unpleasant. It's, of course, Tuesday. It's, of course, the 10th day of January 2012, and the myopic for-profit 1% media can't seem to get anything onto its mind except New Hampshire, New Hampshire, New Hampshire, clown car, look at the clowns. Oh, Jesus, one's juggling. Another one's pulling swords out of his butt. Oh. But it did cause me to think a little bit. Consider something, if you will. And the something I'm considering is this. The first three primaries in the American political cycle are Iowa, New Hampshire, and South Carolina. Now, more than one political commentator in general, has noted the fact that these are three of the most insignificant states in the Union, and for some reason or another, we persist in letting them choose the nominees in our presidential process, go figure. But I got to thinking, they share something else in common. Let's see. Iowa is a state that has a town in it named for a 19th century Muslim terrorist. Mm-hmm. El Qadr, Iowa. Named after the Algerian, what was he called? Marabout? Sort of holy man berserker. Knower of Quran. This is one of those guys who memorized the whole Quran, and he absolutely tormented the French colonialists. They considered him a terrorist. Abraham Lincoln considered him a freedom fighter, and he was much revered in the young republic, such that, in fact, Iowa has a city named for what we would now call a Muslim terrorist. And then there's New Hampshire, the live free or die state. Mm-hmm. New Hampshire holds the distinction of, in the years following the formation, the adoption of the Constitution, the formation of the United States of America, New Hampshire holds the distinction of being the first state ever to threaten secession. Mm-hmm. They tried to get Daniel Webster to handle the case, and he thought, you know, this might not be a bad idea, until he realized that he actually wanted to have a career, power, all of that stuff, so he backed away from it. And then there's South Carolina, the state that started a civil war that killed over 600,000 Americans and did untold amounts of damage, some of which we are dealing with here in the 21st century. So we let reactionary states pick the people who will go on and contest for the leadership of the Republic. Now, I saw a couple of different for-profit 1% media outlets actually had timer tickers up in the corner of the screen. 2 hours, 53 minutes, and 36, 35, 34, 33 seconds until polls close in New Hampshire. New Hampshire's not a big state. I imagine most of the people there know when the polls close. What the hell was that about? Trying, of course, desperately to create a sense of anticipation about it. But what's to anticipate? We are, after all, talking about the Clown Car Act from the circus. And scary clowns they are. Mitt Romney, who likes to fire people. Well, surprise. Not really. The frothy one, Bro Fromix, who says he wants to be the Jesus candidate. Ooh. And Newton Leroy Gingrich and that big old head of his, who is now sounding like some Harry Truman populist, excoriating Mitt Willard Romney for having been a predatory capitalist, when Newton Leroy Gingrich and his big old head is as much a predator as anybody on the planet? It's a circus act. And I don't much give a damn about it. Let the weirdos who vote for Repiglicans in New Hampshire, and make no mistake, they are weirdos. Anybody who makes less than $1 million a year in 2012 and yet persists in voting for a Republican is a freak, a weirdo, a bizarre aberration of mired in ignorance and steeped in bigotry and positively poached in prejudice. I just made that up, and I think it's pretty good. They're weirdos. F what the weirdos think. Because there really is some actual, no kidding, news out there. Which you, I, we will actually deal with in the next 2 hours and 50 minutes. Shall we? Yes, I think so. Let's start with a couple of cases close to home, at least for me. And frankly, given the way air and water moves, it's closer to home for you, no matter where you are, than you might know. Now, I have told you in the past about the trend of studies coming out from researchers investigating what is what mountaintop removal is actually doing to Appalachia and the people who live here, me, my neighbors, my friends, my colleagues, our children, grandchildren, little hillbillies yet undreamt of and unborn and ungotten. Well, Ken Ward had a magnificent post today over at his seminal Coal Tattoo blog. That's at wvgazette.com/coaltattoo. The title of the blog post is "Nobody Wants to Hear About Studies That Link Mountaintop Removal to Cancer and Birth Defects." And Ken, being an award-winning and responsible journalist, doesn't just say things. It's the truth. Among other things, a story under his byline, appearing in the Charleston Gazette, the state paper of record, this morning, headlined, Alpha Fights to Block Health Studies from Permit Lawsuit. Now, you may remember that Alpha is the successor in interest that purchased up Massey after Massey beshat itself with the horrors emanating from the Upper Big Branch disaster. Alpha bought Massey. And then they put up signs saying they was going to be running riot. Running riot. And instead of sleazy, greasy, nasty Don Blankenswine with his little pencil-thin mustache, he was replaced by a guy who wears polo shirts named Kevin Crutchfield, who has a home in Virginia, the Old Dominion. Try to make Alpha look a little more respectable. Well, here's a little update on the respectability of running rat Alpha. Many of you have seen the documentary film The Last Mountain. It's the story of Coal River Mountain in southern West Virginia, and my friends and neighbors and colleagues struggle to save it from the blaster's fuse. The thinking being it would be awfully nice to put a perpetual wind farm on top of Coal River Mountain as opposed to have the top of Coal River Mountain just go the hell away. Well, Alpha is going hell-bent for leather to try to blow up Coal River Mountain, and we're doing everything we can to stop them. They're also trying to blow up a chunk of Logan County, West Virginia. That permit is called REYLAS, R-E-Y-L-A-S. Now, I have told you in the past about these peer-reviewed studies that show, among other things, that a woman who doesn't smoke, doesn't drink, goes and exercises, does everything that she needs to do to protect her unborn baby and is pregnant and happens to live in a county with mountaintop removal in it, that she's got something like a 40 to 80% higher chance of getting cancer than a woman who smokes and drinks and does everything wrong during her pregnancy, birth defects, than a woman who smokes and drinks and carries on and whatever in a county that doesn't have mountaintop removal. Mountaintop removal is a direct link to horrible, horrible, life-altering birth defects. It's also a link to cancer. It's also a link to endocrine disorders and gut disorders, and it ain't good. And the way we know this is because peer-reviewed papers have been produced. You know, other scientists have looked at it and said, yep, science looks sound to me, publish it. And so several groups filed suit in the United States District Court for the Southern District of West Virginia, the Honorable Judge Chambers presiding, and in that suit, for the first time, they have introduced these scientific studies as proof that the permits should not go forward because of their profound impact not on frogs, not on butterflies, not on mayflies, not on bugs or beetles or bunnies, but on human beings who live in proximity to these sites. And so the story by Ken Ward Jr. this morning in the Charleston Gazette details, and of course no one is surprised, the desperate attempt by well-paid lawyers for Alpha Natural Resources, otherwise known as used-to-be Massey Energy, to keep at all costs the hard facts about mountaintop removal from entering into the record of a courtroom proceeding. They gotta bury it. They gotta bury it as sure as they bury the tops of the mountains that they throw into the valleys. They gotta bury it. It's gotta be done away with, taken out in a back alley and and sapped and kicked and stomped and driven into silent submission. That's the way coal companies operate. They cannot operate on a level playing field where all facts are available. They are begging Judge Chambers to suppress the scientifically developed, meticulously recorded data that shows exactly what they are willing to do to people who live in Central Appalachia in the name of unholy profit. They have already, by virtue of discovery requests, chased away a top-notch researcher at WVU and intimidated him into not testifying. Alpha lawyer Bob McCluskey, Ken Ward writes, argues in a court filing that the environmental groups waited too long to raise the studies, but the health impacts cited have nothing to do with the water pollution permit at issue in the case, and that general health studies shouldn't be used in a case over a specific mining permit. Waited too long? Jesus, that's the same rationale from the rats on the Supreme Court of the United States in the Lilly Ledbetter case. Well, she didn't know she was being discriminated against, but she waited too long. Well, and hillbillies didn't know that they were being poisoned to death, but they waited too long. Bob McCluskey has a very special little anteroom in hell waiting for him. He gets paid very, very well by these coal companies to march boldly into court and assert Alpha Natural Resources' right to poison babies in the womb. And may, if there was one, may God damn his soul for all eternity. I wouldn't waste my spit on him. What a foul piece of human excrescence a person would have to be to stand up in a courtroom and speak on the behalf of poisoners. But he does, and he's paid well, and he loves him some coal industry. Go to hell, Bob McCluskey, and stand not upon the order of your going, but go at once. Alpha Natural Resources have sought 20 different categories of documents from Dr. Hendricks, six of which contain subcategories with up to 10 subcategories. The breadth and scope, say lawyers for West Virginia University, of the subpoenas and the many, many hours necessary to compile such information is an unreasonable burden to place upon these non-parties. Bob McCluskey and Alpha say, well, they need the information so they can fully understand and respond to the scientific basis for the studies. You're killing people, you rotten, scum-sucking bastards. That's the basis for the study. Clear enough, Bob? He continues, McCluskey did, it is relevant how Hendricks and his colleagues conducted surveys of residents, what data they used and how they analyzed that data and how they selected and rejected variables and how they responded to peer review comments in order to evaluate the claims made by the Ohio Valley Environmental Coalition that rely on these here articles. Highland can only evaluate the claims made in these articles by having access to the data and documents requested in the subpoenas. What they're saying is they want everything that led to the creation of this study so that they can go and intimidate those people, too, and enforce silence and muzzle the people involved so that there will be no more talking about the fact that Alpha and every stockholder, every shareholder, every pension fund, everybody, everything that is invested in it, its funders on Wall Street, the whole stinking process, all the way down to the last diesel-covered mud grubber on a site, are implicitly, explicitly accessories to homicide. Yeah, we don't want that to come into court, Mr. Kincaid. That is life in central Appalachia.
Running right.
But it's not just here. I told you this might be a little hard tonight. And this was pretty nasty. Who am I kidding? It's a lot nasty. A lot nasty. Reporting for Al Jazeera English, on the 6th of January, Dar Jamal filed a story, Fallujah Babies, Birth Defects Blamed on U.S. Weapons. Now let's understand from the get-go that some of those weapons in Fallujah were comprised of depleted uranium. But beyond those weapons, and beyond the illegal white phosphorus that we used in Fallujah, the explosives were, for the most part, the same explosives that are used on any given mountaintop removal site in Appalachia. Nitrites, fuel oil. And the babies are being born horribly deformed in Fallujah, and babies are being born deformed in Appalachia. And we did it all, we do it both, in the name of the free market. Remember, we were preserving Iraq's oil for the free market. Dar Jamal, whom I consider a friend, writes, while the U.S. military has formally withdrawn from Iraq, doctors and residents of Fallujah are blaming weapons like depleted uranium and white phosphorus used during two devastating U.S. attacks on Fallujah in 2004 for what are being described as catastrophic levels of birth defects and abnormalities. See, that's what we have in Appalachia, too. Catastrophic levels of birth defects and abnormalities. And in both instances, the catastrophic birth defects and abnormalities are the direct and proximate result of deliberate actions and assaults on poor people. Dr. Samira Alani, a pediatric specialist at Fallujah General Hospital, Dar Jamal writes, has taken a personal interest in investigating an explosion of congenital abnormalities that have mushroomed in the wake of the U.S. sieges since 2005. And that was just an attack of a few weeks' duration. Imagine what happens to a region when you use 3.5 million pounds of military-grade high explosives a day. A day. For a decade, what happens? Dr. Alani said, "We have all kinds of defects now, ranging from congenital heart disease to severe physical abnormalities, both in numbers you cannot imagine." She's worked at the hospital since 1997. Since October 2009, she has personally logged 677 cases of birth defects. Eight days later, Al Jazeera visited the city on December the 29th, and the number had already risen to 699. That's 22 in 8 days. 22 catastrophic birth defects and abnormalities at a single hospital in 8 days. Dr. Alani said, "There are not even medical terms to describe some of these conditions because we've never seen them until now. So when I describe it, all I can do is describe the physical defects, but I'm unable to provide a medical term." Most of the severely defected, deformed, and abnormally formed babies in Fallujah, most of them die 20 to 30 minutes after they're born. Some don't. Some are like 4-year-old Abdul Jalil Mohammed, who celebrates his birthday in October. And in October of this year, he'll be 5. He's 4 and a half now. You know how it is with little children. The day after their birthday, they're something and a half. Abdul Jalil Muhammad's birth defects include dilation of 2 heart ventricles and a growth on his lower back that doctors can't remove. He has trouble controlling his muscles. He struggles even to walk. He has no bladder control. He weakens, Dar Jamal says, easily. The doctors think that as he ages, he will develop fluid buildup in his brain, and that it will likely kill him. Rahim is Muhammad's father. He said, "This is the first instance of something like this in all our family. We lived in an area that was heavily bombed by the Americans in 2004, and a missile landed right in front of our home. What else could cause these health problems besides this?" Because Dr. Alani, using science, has documented that there were no congenital birth defect abnormalities whatsoever in the family before we showed up. She keeps a file of photographs of the horrors she has beheld. Babies with cleft palates, elongated heads. One baby born with an eye in the center of its face. Babies with overgrown limbs, limbs too short, malformed ears and noses and spines. And she said she was found wanting in medical terms for some of what she sees, but she did have one medical term that she could cite to Dar Jamal: thanatophoric dysplasia. T-H-A-N-A-T-O-P-H-O-R-I-C. Thanatophoric dysplasia. That's an abnormality that lives in the bones and the thoracic cage. And these are her words. Thanatophoric dysplasia, quote, renders the newborn incompatible with life. Mr. Rahim has been all over his family documenting what has happened just inside his clan. Many of his relatives have had babies after the 2004 arrival of the Americans, and the results have not been good. One of them, he said, was born and looks like a fish. I also personally know of at least three other families who live near us who have these problems also. Maulud Ahmed Jassim says, "We've seen so many miscarriages happen, and we don't know why." Mr. Jassim also asks, "Why is the government not investigating this? Western media seem interested, but neither our local media nor the government are. Why not?" Are Western media interested? Because this is coming from Al Jazeera English. I'm guessing there haven't been any reporters from Radio Rwanda talking to Mr. Rahim or Mr. Jassim. They've taken hair samples from 25 parents of families with children who have birth defects. That strikes a chord of recognition with me, because lots of hair samples have been taken here in Appalachia. Well, in Fallujah, in the families in Fallujah that have had abnormal births, malformed births, defected births, thanatophoric dysplasia, they found the same things that you find in hair samples in Appalachia. Mercury, uranium, bismuth, other heavy metals. Jesus, the photos. And soldiers are coming home because they too were exposed to the same chemicals, the same heavy metal compounds. You might go and use a search engine to find the story of a group from Mississippi who came home and promptly began having deformed babies. Just about every member of that group that had been sent to Iraq and then came home and came back and conceived a child, practically every one of them had something disastrously wrong with the birth. Dr. Alani has been to Japan. There, she studied birth defect rates that are believed to be the direct result of the day that the United States became the only nation on earth ever to attack another one with a nuclear device. Birth defect rates from Hiroshima and Nagasaki. There, the birth defect incidence rates are between 1 and 2%. In Fallujah, they are at 14.7% of all babies, 14%, 14 times the rate of the Japanese defects. I read this story and I shuddered. I felt sick. and I'm not trying to create a sense of equivalence, but the similarity is undeniable. You will recall, for instance, some months back, when the birth defect study came out, initially came out, a sleazy gut bucket coal defending law firm in Washington, D.C., named Crowell Mooring, one or the other, went to great pains to issue a press release that said that Dr. Hendricks' study of birth defects in Appalachian communities with mountaintop removal was insufficient and statistically faulty because it failed to take into account the fact that hillbilly brothers just can't help having sex with their hillbilly sisters. Oh, they used prettier language than that, but that was what they said. And now that this data may be used against them in court, the coal companies are doing everything in their vile power to keep science out of a courtroom, to keep a judge from being able to consider the fact that the people in whose district he serves as their judge to keep him from considering that the coal company before him doesn't care whom they kill, doesn't care whom they poison, doesn't care the number of miscarriages, malformed defects, as long as the check clears. And you know what? Over at the Pentagon, they don't care either how many little boys are born with growths on their back and the inability to control their bladders, who will eventually die from fluid buildup on their brains. The Pentagon doesn't care, because you know what? That war dollar, that's a good dollar. And where Alpha has to squeal and squirm to try to keep the evidence out about what it's doing to hillbillies, there are no lawsuits in Fallujah. Do you remember why Fallujah started? Do you remember why we attacked Fallujah with all the hatred and all the murderous power that our military could muster? Do you remember? Didn't it have to do with the corpses of a couple of mercenaries being strung up from a bridge after the Iraqi people had killed them and burnt their bodies? Wasn't that the triggering moment that unleashed the full force of military death and damnation and destruction upon babies undreamt of and ungotten in Fallujah? Do you remember the right wing hissy about it? Well, you know, those same right-wingers are the ones who say, well, you know, we need to keep blowing up them hillbilly mountains because, well, it's making a nice dollar. That coal dollar, that's a good dollar. A good dollar. Tough to stomach. Mighty tough to stomach. Oh, and by the way, back here closer to home, Monsanto, via a story at Grist by Sarah Laskow, West Virginia continues to win the game of exposing human beings to extremely hazardous conditions in exchange for working-class pay and then telling them to deal with it when they get sick. The latest example of this behavior doesn't even have to do with coal, but with Monsanto and Agent Orange. I'll just read you the text of the story. For 30 years, the Monsanto plant in a town called Nitro, no, really, Nitro was named after chemicals produced there. The Monsanto plant in a town called Nitro produced a defoliant ingredient that would later be used in Agent Orange, but the herbicides made in Nitro were contaminated with dioxin, oh look, which meant that Nitro residents were exposed to the toxic chemical beginning in the late 1940s. Dioxin has been connected to every bad health impact imaginable for adults, problems like cancer and immune suppression, and for kids, problems like birth defects and learning disabilities. And now, because of the way West Virginia law works, the most that the citizens of Nitro can ask from the company is that it covers the cost of medical testing fees. Monsanto is going on trial for polluting Nitro, but judges threw out the part of the case having to do with property remediation, property destruction, property damage. Where are those damned libertarians when you need them and the their sanctimonious attitudes on the right to property and the duty of the government to protect the property holder? Nowhere in sight. That means the jury won't even be able to consider whether the company should pay for cleaning up the town that it polluted. The ruling is being challenged in the Supreme Court of West Virginia, but don't hold your breath. As Sarah Laskow writes at Grist, the moral of the story seems to be, if you have to make a deal with Monsanto or any other corporation ever, don't do it in West Virginia. Let me expand upon that. Don't ever make a deal with Monsanto. Don't ever make a deal with Alpha. These are, of course, you know. The Bible says the wages of sin is death. But I suppose so, too, we could say, are the wages of profit. Looks to be, like I said, a rather tough evening. But we're strong enough for this, because if we don't address and deal with what's going on, how in God's name are we ever going to stop it? Beats the hell out of me. One more. The story of Quilino Ojeda Jimenez. An undocumented immigrant working in this country, working in Chicago, working on a job where doubtless there was no workers' compensation, no, none of that stuff, cash on the, you know how it goes. He was working in Chicago, was Mr. Jimenez, when he fell 20 feet off a building and was paralyzed from the neck down. Like I said, no workers' comp. And he couldn't pay his own medical expenses. I have some understanding of this right now because, frankly, Agnes and Ferg are still waiting for needed testing that the hospital refuses to schedule because there's no insurance. I have a lot of sympathy for this story. I have a lot of rage for this story. Kaylino Ojeda Jimenez, unable to pay for his own hospitalizations from an on-the-job injury, got a visit from the Iceman. Immigrations and Customs Enforcement. On December the 22nd, 2010, quadriplegic, paralyzed from the neck down, the greatest country on earth, the Christian nation, the United States of America, deported him back to Mexico. They dumped him at a little hospital there in Mexico that had no way of dealing with the needs of someone paralyzed from the neck down. I have a photograph here before me of him with his tracheostomy tube in his throat, breathing for him. Handsome young man. Jesus Vargas was Mr. Jimenez's friend in Chicago. He said he never even made it to his home. He was always in the hospital, stuck to the machine that helped him breathe. Now that he is dead, Advocate Christ Medical Center in Oaklawn, Illinois, has said that it will re-examine its policies for treating international patients. Jesus. Kaylino Ojeda Jimenez died on January the 1st, 2012. I'd love to show Rick Santorum or Newt Gingrich, or any godforsaken, filthy, motherless, soulless repiglican in this country, a photograph of Kaylino Ojeda Jimenez. Every time they talk about the illegal aliens, What harm would it have done would it have broken this nation? Because Republicans now, the mantra, yeah, we're broke. Are we so broke that we cannot even afford the care of one 21-year-old mother's son? Who was working without workers' compensation or health care, who was working to survive, who was working to send money back to feed brothers, sisters, mother, father, grandfathers, grandmothers, because he was young and able. the greatest nation on earth is too broke. To see to the needs of one young man who gave his very life in the name of the free market. At some point in time during this last, my interweb tubes collapsed. Bill in Cleveland, Jim noting dead air. Clayton noting, strange. It seems to me that every time you address this shit, your system dies. Just saying. Yeah, it feels a little like that, doesn't it? David in Tennessee, you made him mad. Well, at least you got some hot bohemian fiddle player sawing away in B7th augmented Anabaptist flatted. Hopefully, we are back. Thanks, David. Thanks, Marty. Thanks, Bill. Thanks, Clayton, for letting me know. Thanks, John Fox. I don't know why that happens. I don't know. For what of it that you missed, and God knows how long it went on. Catch the podcast. 9 minutes before the hour, let me say before we go into the break that we had a great week last week in terms of keeping up and trying to finish January, you know, get January into the black. Not so much this yesterday, and no. We need somewhere between $60 and $100 a night to keep ahead of the curve, to keep even with the curve. Between last night and, call it $200, we've got 10 of it, thank you very much. But we do need contributions to the Thrifty 250 in order to make all of this go. The PayPal button, you know, is at headonradionetwork.com, as is the snail mail address. Thank you to all of you who also contribute by the snail mail address. It all goes into the same pool, and it is all very much appreciated. Thank you. Any help you can give to keep this little independent effort going is much appreciated. We'll open up the phone lines coming out of the break. The Green News Report is next. Of course, you know how to reach the program. On your nickel, it's 304-658-3333. Toll free is 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. And, of course, email comes in to Bob Kincaid, BOBKINCAID, at gmail.com. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn.
I'd rather see it on the news it is. Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's Tuesday, January 10, 2012.
We know we can no longer afford to turn our backs on the rivers of America and iconic landscapes like the Grand Canyon.
The Grand Canyon is safe, at least for now. The Obama administration's historic move to protect the nation's fisheries. No snow for Colorado, too much snow in Alaska. Plus, Republican presidential climate deniers visit a very warm New Hampshire.
All of that and more straight ahead from BradBlog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Why have we decided that this one particular factor, carbon dioxide, is in fact the tip of the tail that wags the entire dog?
Because the scientists who have devoted their entire lives to this issue have said as much.
That's the question, and some people have very strong feelings that it is that. There are a lot of other people who don't.
Right. Some people, like the scientists who have devoted their lives to the issue, and the other people who don't, like those who are running for president and counting on money from the fossil fuel industry to do so. Like you, Mr. Santorum, this is your Green News Report. Okay, Des, I know that whenever there's a cold snap across the nation, Fox News likes to point that out and say, what global warming? Well, we have had record temperatures this winter. It has been warm from Los Angeles to North Dakota to New Hampshire. Is Fox News reporting that concern?
Oh, absolutely not.
Imagine that.
And we should also repeat for Mr. Santorum, again, 98% of all climate scientists, the people who study this stuff, say carbon dioxide is the primary factor in dangerous global warming.
You mean some people, as he likes to call it.
Yes, some scientifically oriented people. And we should note that all of the Republican presidential candidates are anti-science to some extent, even former Utah Governor John Huntsman, who publicly accepts the scientific evidence on global warming, says he's against doing anything about it.
Even though the scientists have recommended that we do.
Yes.
Got it.
But despite such pervasive anti-science obstructionism, action is being taken to protect the Grand Canyon.
Every generation of Americans faces moments when we must choose between the pressures of the now and the protection of the timeless.
On Monday, Secretary of the Interior Ken Salazar officially announced a moratorium on new uranium mining claims on land surrounding the Grand Canyon, protecting one of the nation's most popular tourist destinations and the primary water supply for 7 states. But it's only for the next 20 years. Republicans and the mining industry, not surprisingly, slammed the move as harming jobs. But Salazar responded in his speech that current jobs in tourism and outdoor recreation far outweigh any potential loss of future mining jobs.
Conservation is also part of job creation. 4 million people from all over the world come and visit the Grand Canyon every year. Tourism generates $3.5 billion. In local economic activity.
Another historic policy move by the Obama administration this week to protect our food supply. This week, the U.S. announced catch limits on all species of fish caught in U.S. waters. It's the first in the world. After a lengthy negotiation process of 5 years that brought together all stakeholders, including individual fishermen, the new administration policy imposes an absolute maximum catch on all species in U.S. waters for 2012, ending regional mismanagement that allowed dangerous levels of overfishing. This move protects all species from overfishing before they collapse, which is a kind of a novel idea, apparently. Following on 2011's record-breaking extreme weather, 2012's winter extremes are already jumping into the record books. But in the opposite direction, the National Guard has been called out to help residents of Nome, Alaska, who are in danger of running out of food and fuel after record snowfall over the weekend. But it's a different story in the continental U.S. A bizarrely warm January so far across the entire country, with record warm temperatures on average 40 degrees above normal, even in northern states like North Dakota and New Hampshire. No snow and no rain makes the first week of January 2012 the driest on record in the U.S. Lack of snow is already hurting ski resorts and worrying water managers in the Mountain West. If this low snowpack continues, it's not just bad for tourism. It could also mean drought in the Rockies and the Midwest this summer.
Now, environmentalists always talk about, don't worry about the weather. It's the climate that is a concern. Is this a matter of a mild winter, mild weather, not really affecting the climate per se?
Climate scientists long ago predicted that with global warming we would see more extreme and intense weather events occurring more frequently, and that's exactly what we're seeing now. Meteorologist Jeff Masters of Weather Underground says these jet stream patterns have broken records in 4 of the last 6 years.
So in other words, we're going from extremely cold, extremely wet and snowy winters to extremely warm and extremely dry winters.
Yes, exactly as predicted by climate scientists.
Oh, you mean some people, as Rick Santorum would call them. For more on those stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, some people can check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. While you're there, please consider a donation to help support the Green News Report. We rely on you to stay on your public airwaves. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
I really can't stay.
But baby, it's hot outside.
Got to go
but
away.
Baby, it's hot.
Cold outside.
This evening has
been hoping that you drop me.
Bubble Genius. It's not your mother's soap.
Hey, dude, wait 1 second. It's totally my mother's soap.
Bubble Genius. It's not your father's soap.
No. See, right here, I've got soap for my dad.
And you know what? It's not just soap. Look, stuff for my dog.
Oh. Holy crap, there's even stuff for all my pregnant friends.
And hippies.
And hey, dude, loosen that tie. Try it again.
Bubble Genius, we got your soap right here.
And got your bath and body stuff.
www.bubblegenius.com.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Minutes past the hour, second hour of the program underway. This is Tuesday, the 12th of January. This is The Horn. Program note, we will be on the road next week, broadcasting live from the Families USA Conference in Washington, D.C. I'll be there, Rick Smith will be there, and Guy James will be there. I know you're all looking forward to that. As am I. So I've been talking to John Fox a little bit about possibly filling in on the Wednesday show, and then we'll be back. We will be back for the Thursday and the Friday. Now, do please note that we will be live. This show will be live from noon to 3. Noon to 3 on Thursday and Friday, with a rerun playing from 6 to 9. So that's how that'll shake out. But there will be fresh content. Okie dokie. Thank you. Please make a note of it. And we will stop with the shilly-shallying and go straightways to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Wow, I'm the first person.
Oh, hey, Tracy.
Awesome. I don't have much to say other than I'm leaving the store. It's like you knew that I just left the store with my 8-year-old rum. Did you know this?
No, I could feel it. I mean, yeah.
And the simple sugar and the lime juice, and the only thing I eat now is mint. And
I know there's got to be some mint somewhere in L.A.
Oh yeah. Oh, mint is not a problem. I mean, you know, especially, you know, listening to the Brad, you know, the grad log about the crazy heat. I mean, last week we were in, you know, high 80s here. Right now it's 68 degrees. At what time is it here? 4 o'clock in the afternoon?
That's pretty near perfect, isn't it?
Yes, but it's still too warm for this time of the year. It really, really is. I mean, not that I'm complaining, but then again, come the summer when we don't have any water and we're in drought conditions, people are going to be freaking out.
And the mountains catch fire, right.
And we already had our first, we already had a fire last night in Palos Verde.
Oh, for heaven's sakes, in January.
In January. We're already having wildfires in January. Yay. So if we're having fires in January, I'm looking so forward to what's going to be happening here in July and August and our favorite time of the year when it's going to end.
Well, if it, if it keeps getting any weirder, you'll probably have snow.
Yeah. I mean, I just, every day is, it's an adventure in the land of weather in California because you just don't know. And it's just, you know, getting to the point where I just keep everything in my car. I keep a coat, I keep a sweater, and if I was smaller, I would keep a string bikini, but we can't do that. I would not have picked all that on, all of this onto the Americans, to the public, because that's just cruel and unusual punishment. I do believe that just because they make it in my size does not mean I should wear it. That's just, what?
You are, no, you, well, you are a reasonable and prudent person, Tracy.
I am, and I just wish everybody thought like me, because there are certain people that should not wear certain things.
They make Speedos that would fit me. This does not mean that I need to be in a Speedo.
They make Speedos that would fit freaking Chris Christie, and we...
Ooh, the eyes, the brain. Ooh, that hurt.
I get the hot irons out, to burn my eyes out, so I would never have to be, have to inflict myself on seeing that. That is god awful. So I was listening, of course, to the beginning of the show about the, the different horrible things that, between what we've inflicted. Is that what was happening? Was that in Iraq or is Afghanistan?
No, that's Iraq. That's Iraq. Fallujah.
Okay. And then, what's happening, with the young man that died because, how dare he wants to work in this country.
You know, he was just too Mexican to breathe.
Right. I think about that on a regular basis because, of course, I live in California. And you have the day work laborers standing outside of the truck rental places and the paint places and Home Depot and all that, waiting for somebody to pick them up to work. And I think about, what they are, what could happen to them. Aside from, the obvious with the injuries, have you heard about how horrible what's going on with the sexual abuse?
Well, I know that I heard about what was going on in Arizona, that Joe Arpaio's sheriff's department had sort of, why bother, and that it had to do with children and,
yeah.
But I take it there's more than that?
Yeah. See, what's happening out, especially out here, these men are being picked up for work and being raped. And, of course, they're not being reported.
What?
Yeah, they're being raped by men. Uh-huh.
Oh, Jesus.
That is going to be the women because, that's just what's done.
But well, no, I think, no, that's, no, with, that's probably been going on all along.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
it's the men also.
Because all are vulnerable. All are, yeah.
And what are you going to do? You're going to, you've been raped and violated by some sick bastard. And then, and they know they're not going to go to the police.
Well, no.
And then on top of that, here's the best part. A lot of them don't even get paid.
Jesus.
So, I just...
Well, Republicans are cheap bastards.
There's some cheap money-grabbing sons of bitches, aren't they? It just sickens me to think about what is, and these are these good Christians. That's, again, with me being a Christian, and it almost makes my teeth fall out to say I'm a Christian, because I know what kind of Christian I am, and I, I'm not the...
Yeah, what was the name of the hospital that sent Mr. Jimenez to his death. Oh, yes. Advocate Christ Medical Center.
Advocate. So where was the advocating at? Is, you know, who were they advocating for?
Well, the story I have says Ojeda's deportation followed a heated battle between the hospital and immigration advocates. So the hospital was on the side of saying, get him out of here. He's bad for the bottom line. It'll affect our Christmas bonus.
Mm-hmm. So, but they had an immigration advocate, and what were they saying?
They were saying, keep him right where he is. He doesn't deserve to die. They made it repeatedly clear, Tracy, that where the hospital wanted to dump him in Mexico did not have the resources nor the technology to deal with an individual who needed a machine to do his breathing and could not move from the neck down.
And so is there a lawsuit against this hospital for wrongful death or anything?
I don't know. That's not...
But they were working within the law because he was here illegally, yes?
Right. Well, it's kind of like that rape story now, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. It's okay, you know. So what if you've been raped and brutalized and abused and whatnot and so forth, but you're here illegally, so you have no rights. But I thought that anybody that was here in this country legally or no still had rights, yes?
Not really. No. There are no rights. Clearly, for instance, where habeas corpus is concerned, we had that story a couple of weeks ago. Maybe you weren't listening, and that's not like guilt tripping you or anything. But the fact of the matter is, courts are now holding in this country that the word "the people" in the Constitution only refers to American citizens. You know, like in the Second Amendment where it says the right of the people to keep and arm bears?
Right.
Well, that don't apply to no Mexican, nor Honduran, nor Guatemalan, nor none of them. They ain't got no right to keep and arm bears. Only good white Christian Americans.
American. And speaking of people who sound like that, I have just found out about... Of course, I always find out about people that are amazing after they die because I'm on the late freight. So I joined a book club, and this month's book is to read anything by Molly Ivan.
That would be admirable. She is still more than relevant.
I'm reading one of her books, and I'm crying. I'm laughing, so it's a gut buster. And then, in addition to that, on Thursday, we're going to go see the Kathleen Turner play Red Hot Patriot. About that she's portraying.
Oh, I've heard about that, and that's got to just be amazing.
I'm looking forward to it. We're going to see it Thursday evening. So I'm really looking, because we usually don't get a chance to tie in the book with the play within the same same time frame. So, I'm really, really excited about it because I love Kathleen Turner anyway. And
sure.
Back in the day, if I was a lesbian, even if I wasn't a lesbian, I'd have to do Kathleen Turner. I'm sorry. What?
Just another one of those moments where I'm glad Tracy said it and I didn't, because it takes, I'm getting a little relief here.
And body heat. Oh my God, William Hurt threw a freaking chair through the window to get to her. That, I'm pretty sure the door was unlocked. I'm pretty sure she would have opened the door for the man, but he was in so much needing to get to her, he just said, screw it. Give me a damn chair. I'm going to throw the chair through the window.
Romancing the Stone is still way up there in my book, too.
Yes, and the War of the Roses, and her, wasn't she the voice of Jessica Rabbit?
Yes, she was.
I'm not bad, I'm just drawn that way.
Exactly.
See, right there, those few seconds shows how much I don't have a life. That I can name pretty much every Kathleen Turner movie And then bring in the Jessica Rabbit thing about saying that I'm not bad, I'm just going that way.
Let's face it, I'm not the only male in this audience who probably had a little crush on... that was my first ever crush on a cartoon character.
Seriously, Jessica Rabbit? Wow. Yeah,
yeah, Betty Boop, Betty Boop never did it for me.
No, Betty Boop was just... She was just weird. I mean, that head alone. I mean, she was a step away from Stewart. You know,
Stewie?
Stewie from Family Guy. Well, their head's about turning about the same way, isn't it? Am I awful? Am I an awful person?
No, you're observant is what you are.
Yeah, it's those little things. Like I said, my head is filled with useless pieces of information. But back on the whole, I've been, you know, I try very desperately to try to stay aware of what's going on in my city, at least enough that I do not drink every night. And like I said, in one of my classes, and while I was in school, and that's the thing we were talking about was the immigration problem. Now, I don't consider immigration a problem. The way it's being handled is a problem, because as quiet as it's kept, aren't we a nation of immigrants?
Well, sure we are. And every time I think about that concept, I think about Tom Tancredo, who hates all immigrants, but whose grandmother and grandfather got off the flippin' boat. I'm here. No more now, please.
It's that thing, like you said, they said the GOME party is all about me. And the only people that are entitled to anything this country has to offer are the good white Christian folk of this country. That's why we don't have Medicare across the board. Like, who was it that, Truman. What was it, Truman? That started with the Medicare, and it was started with the seniors, and then, you know,
Johnson. The plan was that eventually it would grow to cover everybody.
Because, the main reasons was because they wanted to, you know, a social safety net so we wouldn't have another war. So I think it was Truman that got it started because, you know.
Well, the idea got started with Truman. And, right. In fact, it was with the transition to Eisenhower that we had our first full-on oh, hell no, Republican backlash against taking care of American citizens. Because they had done, you know, the Republicans had enough, what with Truman integrating the military and them not having any say-so in it.
How dare he?
Yeah. By the way, the movie reference is playing well. David in Tennessee just wrote and said, having heard her long-form interview twice about this performance, the Red Hot Patriot, let me tell you, Kathleen Turner's heart and all her glorious parts are fully and vigorously in her performance. And David adds, P.S., I still consider smoking might be a good thing when my mind wanders back to body heat. Then reality goes upside my head and I get so over it. So, you've spoken to David from Tennessee, and you also reached out to Marty in Northern California, who said, after Tracy's finished with reading Molly Ivan, she should put aside any problems with language and listen to George Carlin. And in body heat, the door was locked. William Hurt tried the doorknob. And what I would have given back in the 80s to be sandwiched between Kathleen Turner and Sharon Stone.
Oh, Sharon Stone, yes.
And then Jim also notes, I spoke with Ms. Ivins shortly before her death and thanked her from the bottom of my heart for her life and her contributions.
Yeah, because that's what I'm saying. Had I heard of, I mean, like I said, I'm late in the political game and, you know, reading political satire. And so I thank goodness for you guys and enlightening me and the fact that I guess my book club is rather liberal, the organizer.
Beats the hell out of having to read some George Will book about baseball, trust me.
Right, or reading Jane Eyre, okay? I mean, don't get me wrong, I love me some Jane Eyre, but, you know, if I don't have to...
No, see, you bring up Jane Eyre, and the next thing that comes to mind is Ethan Frome by Edith Wharton, and I just want... I mean, they made me read that in high school. about that feller who was illicitly in love with that woman, and so he decided to commit suicide by bobsled, and it didn't work, and he wound up with her having to take care of him for the rest of his days. It's like, oh, Jesus, please, bobsled? Suicide by bobsled?
The Jamaican bobsledding team would have had a better chance of suicide by bobsled.
Oh, it was terrible. And
how many years?
And I know Mark Twain's best friend was William Dean Howells, but I'd rather take a whipping than read William Dean Howells or Henry James.
And it's like, you know, as much as, you know, Steinbeck, you know, he was a brilliant writer, but his shit was so depressing. And I don't care, Hemingway too.
Now don't be stepping on the Hemingway.
Sorry.
Okay.
It's one of those things.
No, but then again, I'm so shallow. I'm presently reading a book about a private eye dinosaur in L.A. Really?
Did you really say a private eye dinosaur?
Yes, a private eye dinosaur. There are three books by Eric Garcia, one called Anonymous Rex, one called Casual Rex, and another one called Hot and Sweaty Rex. And the premise is that the dinosaurs never died off. They just live in costume among us humans.
Okay.
Who, when they're disgusted with us, they refer to us as monkey effers. And it's written all very, you know, Chandler-esque, and it's noir, dinosaur noir, no kidding.
We'll see, I'm going to have to check that out now. But, so, like I said, when I wrote, because I just joined this book club back in October, I figured that I don't read enough, and so I figured maybe if I join a book club, I will be forced to read at least one book a month or so, which is working, actually. So back in October, we read, you know, the horror stories, Stephen King, and, you know, the different, like, the Yellow Wallpaper and Edgar Allan Poe short stories and the like. So I'm like, of course, me being, as usual, the fly in the buttermilk, I write to the organizer, hey, since I'm the only Negro in the group, I said, and I was good. Then I said, hey, why don't we try this? In honor of Black History Month in February, why don't we read a book by an African-American author? And at first I didn't hear anything, and I'm like, uh-oh, here we go.
Crickets.
I was like, crickets.
Really white crickets.
Really, and I was like, oh, God, I'm glad to read the book club because... But then in December, last month, we had a Christmas party, and the organizer of the book club comes up to me gushing. She's like, oh, my God, that is such a great idea, and she let me suggest the book. And I was going to do something kind of sedate like Maya Angelou because, you know,
get them all uncomfortable and get them a copy of Soul on Ice.
No, see, actually I wanted to do that, but I really wanted to do The Ways of White Folks by Langston Hughes, when he just rips white people apart left and right. So I'm like, I said, okay, The Color Purple. Because, see, in The Color Purple, white people get skewered too. And just enough, but then it's not as bad as The Help, because they don't get skewered enough, but, you know, it's still that thing with the assuaging of the white guilt. Well, see, it shows you I'm not as bad as they are. I think the bottom line is, Bob, I think I'm just going to write a book.
Why don't you just do that?
It's just white, you know.
No, I think that would be a wonderful goal. And you could work in the taco truck and maybe a couple of mojitos and...
Right.
It was an unseasonably warm January evening as I was headed for Hollywood and Vine.
Exactly, because it's just I try not to get angry with white people. Sometimes it's not their fault. It's just, you know, they're born.
With some of us, you go forgive them, Father, for they know not what they do.
Yes, some of them, but not like, you know, Chris Christie.
Oh, by the way, I got an update. I got an update for you on last night's Georgia math quiz story.
Oh, do tell.
Yes, it turns out that this story, that this test was produced for a school in which, in which the third graders, the third graders in this school, this school's, it's, demographics, 62% of the students are Hispanic or Latino, 24% are black or African-American, 5% are white. 87% of the students there qualify for free or reduced lunch. And yes, indeedy, just as I had suspected, Frederick, the slave's name is Frederick because they are directly referring to Frederick Douglass because the children in third grade had read a book about Frederick Douglass. So necessarily, we're going to work it in to the math curriculum by letting them know that Frederick got hit, you know, is getting beat. And Frederick has to pick oranges from orange trees, and Frederick has to pick cotton.
Now, question. Now, where is this? Because, see, I was, you know, remember I told you that I was watching Thurgood, and I finished watching it last night, because I had only watched the first 10 minutes of it when I had talked to you yesterday. And the whole orange thing, because there's this part in when he's talking about when he's, I'm trying to think, I think he's already in law school. And of course, back then they didn't really have, you know, lunches and, you know, and definitely couldn't eat at the counter, so that everybody had to bring their own lunch. So he's sitting somewhere, and he's been thinking about this orange all day long, right? And so this little boy looking at him, all hungry, you know, probably skin and bones. And so he's looking at the orange, and he's thinking, you know, I'll give him part of my sandwich, I'll do this and do this. But he was, this little boy was really looking at this orange. So Thurgood Marshall gave him the orange, and the little boy just started, you know, pushing the orange in his face, biting through the rind, and all this. And Thurgood Marshall started, you know, it's like, what are you doing? This was a beautiful, perfect orange. You're supposed to, you know, savor it by peeling it. It's a whole ritual, right?
Not if you're hungry.
But wait, here's the deal. His mentor jumped into Thurgood Marshall's ass. Is like, why are you yelling at this? He's like, look what he's done to this orange. He's like, this young man has probably never seen an orange before in his life and had no idea so you could not only embarrass yourself, but you've embarrassed this young man over an orange.
And I don't know if the movie went into this level of detail, Tracy, but it is worth noting that Mark Twain was instrumental in getting, I think he was the first black student to attend Yale Law School into Yale Law School, because he was big in Connecticut, Twain was. And that man went on to be a partner in the firm that taught Thurgood Marshall how to be a lawyer.
Well, but they didn't talk about Mark Twain. But they did talk about him being a graduate of Yale with his Phi Beta Kappa key on, and, you know, I'm telling you, I'm sitting here like grinning like the village idiot, you know, watching, because like I said, Lawrence Fishburne is a god. He's a god. There's no other way of saying it. Have you ever seen him perform live?
No, not. Come on, Tracy. Where do I live? Yeah, I just caught Lawrence down at the Shell and Subway last week. No, I'm being an ass, but.
You're being an ass. It's not like you don't travel. I know you have left your state on occasion, okay? And,
they do let me out once in a while.
You know, but I was privileged enough to see him and Angela Bassett do August Wilson's Fences.
Oh, hello.
Live.
Wow.
Yeah, and this was like 4 years ago, and I still get goose pimples. Because, see, what had happened was, my girlfriend and I had tickets, and we got there, you know, right before, you know, we went to dinner and got there like 10 minutes before the show started. And they had given away our seats. And I'm like, excuse me? They said, well, we didn't know you were coming. I'm like, okay, have the play started? They're like, no. And, of course, I'm about to get all indignant and ghetto, right, because I can be really indignant and ghetto. And my girlfriend, who is also African-American, she's a lawyer. Who actually also graduated from Yale Law School with honors. Okay? So you have crazy ghetto girl and educated crazy ghetto girl. And you know, like I said, people like, I love it when people get mad at me. They're like, oh, you're playing the race card. I'm like, and so what if I am? Why are folks been playing the race card all their lives? Why can't I hold
it? It ain't, well, it's the, no, see, with white folks, Tracy, it's not a card, it's the, whole effing deck.
The whole fucking deck, exactly. Yeah. You know, let me get my trump card out every so often.
Oh,
okay.
By the way, just to finish off the story in Gwinnett County, Georgia, real quick, because we were about to get away from it.
Right, because we do that.
The principal of Beaver Ridge Elementary School.
Right there says it all, Beaver Ridge.
Is a fellow by the name of Jose De Jesus. And he was frantically trying to once he saw what was on that math test, he was frantically trying to collect up all the papers so that they couldn't be circulated. But then they did go out. So at least the principal recognized this was not a good idea. Let's see. Among other things, no one is sure. Sloan Roach said they're not sure whether the teachers there at Beaver Ridge Elementary School, those teachers and staff, she's not sure if they've ever had any diversity training. So, perfect storm.
Well, has anything, because here's my question. I forget what school it was. I don't even know where it was. But over the holidays, this teacher got suspended. Are you ready for this? Telling, I don't know if they were first graders, kindergartners, or whatever, but little kids, telling them that there was no such thing as Santa Claus. There was
That's
a huge uproar because this teacher told these kids that there's no such thing as Santa Claus, and the kids were all freaked out. Now, she got suspended. No pay, okay? Not only did she get suspended, I don't know if she didn't get any pay, but she definitely got suspended. And they were thinking about, almost talking about possibly firing her. Because she told kids there's this mythical character, because it was determined that it should be up to the parents to tell their children whether or not there's a Santa Claus or yay or nay. So if we're going to suspend somebody for saying that there's no Santa Claus, are they going to get suspended about, you know, teaching children about being beaten because they didn't pick enough oranges?
That's the thing we don't know. Right now they're just trying to minimize damage, but, you know, this was just insensitive and it was poorly thought out, and this lesson plan will never be used again.
Gee, thanks. That's right up there. When I was in 11th grade, I had to do a reading of Henry David Thoreau because I had a teacher that just thought he was the bee's knees. And now that I'm older, I appreciate Thoreau, but when in 11th grade, I could give a rat's ass about, you know, again, not knowing about, you know, that he was about doing about civil disobedience and self-reliance, yada, 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 yada. I could give a rat's ass. But obviously my report wasn't as high up as and my English teacher basically told me, because I was in an honors English class, and he told me that I was not deserving to be in his class. And we both know what that means, because I was the only black person in his class.
Oh, for heaven's sakes.
You know, so, and of course nothing was, you know, I never said anything. I knew what he meant. But I never said anything because I didn't think anything would be done. And I'm pretty sure, but, you know, if I had told my mother, all hell would have been raised.
Yeah, something would have been done. You would have been flunked.
Yes, I would have been flunked. So
yeah.
Those things where you, as a black person, a woman of, whatever the hell I'm supposed to be this week, I don't know whatever the politically correct term is, they always get the shit out of the stick. Of the jail or what have you, and you know this curriculum would never be taught again. Then why in the world did they think that it was okay to be taught in the first place?
Right, and Marty notes, he says, "Of course, we do know that it will be Principal De Jesus's head that rolls after this, and his head alone."
And his head alone, right? It'll be all on him. But just like, because it's I don't get it.
No.
Actually, I do get it. I see.
Yeah, it's a little of both. You don't want it, but you do.
But I do, and you know, when I listen to, you know, watching the whole thing with with Thurgood Marshall's story, and just listening to what she went through. You know, one of the things that is, but this is what toward the end of the play, and Thurgood Marshall is retiring, right? And they're asking him, well, should they replace him with another Negro? He's like, it's not whether or not that it depends on the Negro. And I'm thinking, this is, you know, that Clarence Thomas,
No.
No. And that's basically what Thurgood Marshall meant. He's like, you know, I don't want just, if you're going to replace me with another Negro, I don't want just any Negro.
Yeah, don't replace me with one from the Big House.
Right. Don't replace me with somebody like Clarence Thomas, in which, I mean, he was not a replacement from Thurgood Marshall because, you know, Thurgood Marshall has since retired before, you know.
Did they detail in the film the story about him giving the note to the Secret Service guy during the Nixon administration?
Mm-hmm. That?
Yeah, he was in the hospital. He was gravely ill. And Nixon sent a Secret Service detail over, I just want to see if he's going to die.
Right, and he's like, not yet.
And he writes this note that says, not yet, damn it.
God damn it.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Yeah, that's a beautiful moment. Hey, Tracy, have yourself a wonderful evening. It's good to hear from you. Do you need to be on hold?
Yes, I do.
Okay, because you're working tonight, right?
Of course. No, actually, I'm going to go have a mojito once I get home.
Bad woman.
I'm going to try my hand at mojito making.
Well, just remember, muddle the mint before you get muddled.
Okay.
All right.
Bye.
Take care. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Tracy calling from a cab in the wilds of L.A. And just a little bit of follow-up more on the Kelino Ojeda Jimenez. When he was transferred from Christ Advocate Hospital, Advocate Christ, whatever, Advocate Christ Medical Center of Oaklawn, Illinois, when he was transferred from there, he was sent to a little tiny hospital in Mexico that was nothing more than a concrete one-story slab building. As you know, tracheostomy care is something that you've got to be extremely attentive to, or death comes quickly. When it was said that the little hospital in Mexico didn't have the technology to keep up with Mr. Jimenez's care, you think, well, you know, maybe they don't have all the really fancy machines that go ping like we've got here in the land of the free and the home of the brave. I mean, it's Mexico, right? No. It was too expensive to do a daily filter replacement on his ventilator. So instead, hospital staff, doing the best they could, just cleaned the filters once a day. Along the way, he had a couple of episodes of cardiac arrest. Along the way, Mr. Jimenez developed a septic infection. And finally, he was transferred this past December 19th to a larger hospital in Juchitán. But the sepsis continued unabated, pneumonia set in, and on January 1st, in the early morning hours, he died. Because Advocate Christ Memorial Medical Center forgot that Christ part in their name. Yeah. David in Tennessee noting, and it was David who first put me onto Barb and Coor Rum. That's R-H-U-M. David noting, armed as Tracy is with a rum we both love and admire, plus a few fresh ingredients, Tracy is headed toward a fine evening. Yes, she is. Yes, she is. All right, let's see what else is going on. Hey, welcome to the program.
You got me again, so put me on hold.
Okay, stand by. Well, you are on the way to a fine evening.
Yes, I am, and I'm looking forward to it, too.
All right. Let's try again. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello?
Hello.
Oh, Cossack, what's happening, man? Been a while.
Yeah. Happy New Year.
And to you as well. At least I hope.
We hope so. First of all, I wanted to thank you for the Zevon.
Oh, wasn't that fun? Seemed appropriate.
Yeah. As a matter of fact...
That's called Run Straight Down, by the way.
Yeah, I know. I saw him live at Lisner Auditorium doing that on that particular tour. So, I appreciate that a hell of a lot.
And that album, I think, was produced by someone from REM, I believe. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, it's quite good. You've got the album, right?
Sort of. I've got chunks of it.
Oh. You know, that kind of reminds me of where you're at.
Well, that's what it got me thinking about, too, because I remembered the lyric from it.
Mm-hmm.
Warren Zevon, people responded strangely to that album.
I thought it was brilliant.
And am I mistaken, or is that David Gilmour on the guitar?
I believe so.
It sounds like a David Gilmour lead. Yep, that's him. I just checked it.
Yeah. It was fantastic, I thought.
Well, that list of chemicals that it starts out with.
Uh-huh.
Those are all toxic killers, aren't they?
Yeah. And you probably got them in your drinking water.
Yeah.
I hate to say that.
Well, there just aren't a lot of people who can write a line like, I went walking in the wasted city, started thinking about entropy in a rock and roll song.
Yeah. Well, he was a brilliant man, brilliant songwriter,
and of course was a vociferous, virulent anti-smoker.
Yeah,
and yet died of lung cancer. Gee, how do you reckon that happened?
From his daddy. His dad worked in the shipyards. With asbestos.
I mean, this line, well, obviously the song stays with me. But, we've been living in the shadows all our lives where it's stand in line and don't look back and don't look left and don't look right. So we hide our eyes and wonder who'll survive waiting for the night.
Mm-hmm.
Cossack, I'm sure you've been in a class or something where they say, look to your left, look to your right, and you do, and they go, one of you three will not be here in 6 weeks' time.
Correct. Law school.
Well, that's one of the medical school, graduate school for accountants. Right. Where they call the herd.
Yeah.
Well, hell, they do it in freshman English in state universities. Well, see, it's gotten to where if you were at all aware of what's being done in Central Appalachia, we've started to look at each other that way. You know, it was just a little more than a year ago that we buried Judy Bonds.
Mm-hmm.
And we recognized that she had been taken at an early age from a cancer that came from the fact that she had lived next to a coal prep plant.
Right.
And after that realization, and looking around at the people who were going around us, now we kind of look at each other and cherish each other, I think, a little bit more, because we're on the list. And you know what? The coal industry would be more than happy to have the people who are making noises about them killing us drop dead.
No, correct. They'll do whatever they can to help hasten that along. And, of course, we don't want any science injected into our legal case. What a horrible thought, you know.
Right.
You know, if you have actual facts, you know, scientific facts, oh no, can't have that. Yeah, I was wondering if you ever got that email I sent you.
Which one? I've gotten a lot of them.
Most recent one where I kind of explained my outburst there.
No, yeah, I did get that.
Yeah.
But it's...
It's one of those things, for example, when you look at the totality of things and you see that, for example, when the New York Times removed a guy named David Binder, who had actually been living in Yugoslavia for the ten preceding years.
Is that the same David Binder that does radio stuff? And
I'm not sure, to be honest with you. And they removed him and replaced him with a nitwit who didn't speak the language or anything to provide the commentary and the news reporting. And they did the same thing as in these times where they had Diana Johnstone, again another person who had been living in Yugoslavia, spoke the language, had been there for years, and had been writing for In These Times for over a decade. And they removed her and replaced her with a mouthpiece from the Clinton administration. And this whole thing, and I keep trying to explain this to people, that the left basically jumped on this humanitarian intervention bandwagon that was rolled out by the Clinton administration. This is all, you know, we're doing this for humanitarian reasons. Just like, have you heard of the latest terrorist bust they had?
Which one?
Of a guy from born in the old Yugoslavia, is how they depicted it. And finally it turns out he's a Muslim from Kosovo. Our allies, our friends. And he was trying to buy AK-47s and an exploding belt because he wanted to kill as many Americans as possible. And he was going to immolate himself at a nightclub. And it turns out that, shock surprise, he's a Kosovar, just like the people who were involved in the Fort Dix pizza plot. And similar to that lunatic in, I think it was Utah, who shot up the mall, turns out he was a Bosnian Muslim. And strangely enough, Bob, the people who we've wronged the most, the ones that we have shit upon, you know, the people who were our allies through two world wars, the Serbs. You haven't seen a single Serb running around trying to blow Americans up, surprisingly.
Well, I think about those families that Dar Jamal documented in Iraq. And I know my own failings, Cossack, as a human being. And I know how I feel about the fact that I know that there are toxic chemicals coursing through the bodies of my children.
Mm-hmm.
And when you consider it's happening to family after family after family after family in Fallujah, 14.7% birth defect abnormality rate.
Yeah.
It's a wonder that there isn't a line around the block at the exploding belt store.
Oh, yeah. Well,
and for all we know, there may be.
Exactly.
And yeah. when that has been done, I am in no wise either advocating or condoning such conduct.
No.
But when everything has been taken from you, when there is no specific target apart from the symbols of what has harmed you, what do you do? Do you just sit there and say, they're bigger than us, and therefore we have to take it? Is it just that little chapter out of Thucydides where he says great states do what they can and small states do what they must, and my baby's going to be born with flippers?
Yeah.
Or do you go and line up at the exploding belt store and hope that there will be you can say at least I... And they're taking vengeance on innocents. But weren't they innocent, too?
Sure. Well, that's like, what's his name? The professor out in Colorado who got kicked out.
Oh, Ward Churchill.
Ward Churchill. When he said, you know, the chickens are coming home to roost. And anybody who has pointed out that 9/11 is a result of our policies, they get jumped on, they get crapped on. You know, how dare you say this? How dare you intimate that this could possibly be the problem? Because it is. It's very simple.
But, you know, there is, if there's anything to be said out of the creepy weirdness of cranky old Ron Paul, is that he apparently has 25% of the Republican Party taking seriously the concept of blowback.
Yeah.
Now, I don't agree with Ron Paul or the means by which he reaches his conclusions, but we really should take into consideration blowback.
Yeah. Well, I agree with Ron Paul on certain points. This is one of them. You know, I kind of like his idea of foreign policy. Gee, you know, if we stop meddling in everyone's affairs, if we close down our 800-some foreign military bases, if we stopped keeping despots in place, and at the same time we stopped trying to depose people we don't like Chavez, for example, in Venezuela, there might be a whole hell of a lot less resentment of the U.S. if we just did normal things like that. I mean, wouldn't you resent it? I mean, you resent the coal company.
Resent it? I hate them.
Exactly.
Like I said, we know now from the science that's out there about what's going on here. We know that everybody from the Wall Street bankster who signs off on the loans that make this whole fraudulent transaction stay afloat to the CEO, to the vice president for this, to that sleazy gut bucket of a lawyer, Bob McCluskey.
Yeah.
All the way down to the last diesel mechanic on the site. They are all complicit in homicides.
Exactly.
In feticides. You know, we've got a law in the state of West Virginia that says that if you commit a crime and in the course of committing the crime you hurt a fetus, that you are equally chargeable with the harm to the fetus as you are with the harm to the postborn.
Correct.
But that's not... Has anybody brought a charge on that? Well, hell no.
Of course not.
But the thing, that also has to be taken into account is the responsibility of every last shareholder.
Yeah.
Every last one. I guess I would cut some slack because there is, you know, there's a tactical reason to go out and buy a share of Alpha so that you can sit in the stockholders meeting or maybe go in and occupy it.
Yeah.
But there is a complicit, you know, if your teacher's retirement system has holdings in Alpha Natural Resources or any other company that does business in mountaintop removal or any other company that does business with the mountaintop removal industry like Caterpillar.
Correct.
Then, no, you've got a hand in it. And you've got to deal with it. But that's the vast majority of the free market, Cossack.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's shareholding in Monsanto. I mean, I don't do the stock stuff, so God Almighty, how many shares extant are there of Monsanto?
Too many.
But we can't make Monsanto clean up Nitro West Virginia because it might be bad for their quarterly share price.
Right. And it's lunacy, very simply. I mean, the thing of it is, we don't want to pay attention to the fact that the fault in the system is the system. Capitalism, the way it is organized, modern day capitalism, is killing us and will kill us. Because you know, and I know, that every last company that has money invested and wants to get its money back doesn't care one whit if their actions are making the earth untenable. They're interested, as you noted, in this quarter. I don't give a damn what's going to happen next year. I'm interested in right now what's happening this quarter. If I make money, I'm happy.
Yeah, and that's why I got so excited a few nights ago about the news story about Patagonia becoming a benefit corporation.
Mm-hmm.
Under the new law that went into effect in California. It's a way for corporations to step outside that predatory model. The question is how many corporations will do that? You know, I had a note from our buddy Tom out in Northern California, and he said, I was interested to hear what you had to say about the new California Benefit Corporation law. I sent an email to Jared Huffman's campaign thanking him and suggesting a listen to Friday's show. Isn't it cool how these things go around?
Mm-hmm.
Tom says, Huffman is my representative in the California Assembly and is now running to replace the retiring Lynn Woolsey in an all-new and very different district. It will be difficult to decide when voting time comes around. I have an embarrassment of riches for candidates. I wish all three of these could go to Congress, Jared Huffman, Norman Solomon, and Susan Adams. And he notes that you can see that the political climate is so different here from where you are or in all of the stands. Alabama stand, Texas stand, you know, Mississippi stand. Tom says, I've never been to the South, and I find it fascinating to learn about the region from you. My only connection is that my dad grew up in Anniston, Alabama, but his parents were Yankees and only there for 12 years or so. He says, this is the kind of thing, you know, this is life-changing stuff. Dad didn't talk very much, but sometimes he would get to reminiscing. He says, my granddad was a chemist at the time, worked for Swan Chemical. Choke. Did they make nitrates for Germany? I don't know, but granddad got a patent for a method of synthesizing nitrates. When my dad was 14, 1940, they moved to Ohio as granddad had become a patent attorney. But granny, now she was a bit of a subversive for Alabama. Like most middle-class families of the time, they would employ a local, quote-unquote, colored girl. He said, sorry, I have a hard time even typing that, to clean house. But granny was pretty fastidious on her own, and most of the time was devoted to teaching the young woman to read. Granny was also a lifelong atheist. I imagine there weren't many in Anniston, and the story goes that the local preacher devoted a great deal of time trying to convert her without success. Hopefully some of that rubbed off along with the reading lessons. What a different world. Tom works in Richmond, lives in San Rafael, and he says, and I listened to today's show live at work and driving home across the bridge via his smartphone. How cool. But the idea that this benefit corporation thing could catch on. Everybody within an ounce of activism in them should at least find a member of the state legislature who might be open to the idea and suggest it. Make it possible for companies to be those things.
Yeah.
Wherever you are. What an amazing thing it would be, for instance, to see that law passed in Alabama stan. Or here in West Virginia stan.
You are joking, right?
Well, no, I'd love to see them passed here.
Well, yeah, but...
Yeah, I recognize that there's a little bit of unreality in my desire.
Well, no, nothing wrong with the desire, just the possibility, you know, with the situation on the ground, so to speak.
Indeed.
It never happened in Alabama.
Well, how is the beginning of January shaken out for you, Cossack?
Not too great. Found out that... just got back from the nephrologist today to find out that I'm looking at dialysis pretty soon.
Oh shit!
Yeah.
There's no way to say, well, you know, that'll be okay.
Yeah. No. Unfortunately, I've had several friends that have gone on dialysis, and shortly thereafter, they've gone on.
Hang on, brother. Hang on. And hopefully we will talk soon.
Hopefully.
All right. Take care, Cossack.
Take care, Bob.
Bye now.
Good talking to you.
Good talking to you. Later. The Cossack calling from North Florida. 6 minutes past the hour. By the way, Andy sending along a film recommendation for all of us. The new Angelina Jolie film. In the Land of Blood and Honey. He says it's brutal, a lot of atrocities, big-time ethnic cleansing and racist policies, especially against Muslim women. There are mass killings of men and boys. He said, go see it. It puts all war in a bad, bad light. Thanks, Andy. Thanks. Hey, look, it's 8:06 p.m. Do we have a winner in New Hampshire? You know what? Kelino Ojeda Jimenez doesn't care if there's a winner in New Hampshire. No, sir. No, ma'am. He doesn't. He is, as the Scots might say, well past Karen. Do they care what happened in New Hampshire, in Fallujah? I'd say not really. Well, except for the fact that a few days ago, Rick Perry said that he'd send the troops back into Iraq. Because, you know, Iraq isn't poisoned enough yet. That's the argument they use for that Muslim Kenyan anti-colonialist with a deep-seated hatred of white people being liberal and playing to his liberal base by untimely removing our troops from the Iraq when there were still plenty of oil left to get. As for what happened in New Hampshire, Jeanette with the statement of the evening, nothing but losers in New Hampshire, candidates, and everyone who voted for them. She also asks the question, is there something wrong with me? Fallujah, birth defects caused by white phosphorus or depleted uranium or whatever the horrifying substance is. Very, 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 very to infinity, bad. But exploding belt store almost made me pee my pants. I got her earlier with, I went and saw Lawrence Fishburne last week down to the Shell station and Subway. I wasn't trying to be an ass or anything, but Pittsburgh's a long way away, and once in a while something cultural will come to Lexington, Kentucky, and Richmond's damn near 8 hours, and you know that when we push West Virginia tourism, we say we're central to everybody. We're 8 hours from everywhere. 8 hours from Nash Vegas. 8 hours from the beach. 6-7 hours from D.C., whence I will be driving next week. It's hard to get that really top-notch cultural experience here. I mean, granted, some stuff comes into the Clay Center in Charleston, but then again, they're not giving the tickets away for free. Not much chance I'll see anything down there, or, for that matter, see the upcoming Van Halen tour that we were talking about last night. No, I'm not trying to get all personal or anything, but I have sympathy. It's not the same thing. It is not the same thing by any stretch of the imagination, but I have sympathies for anybody who has to deal with this ferocious, vicious healthcare system. As I told you last week, Agnes and Ferg got rear-ended hard on the 30th of December. When they were in the emergency room, they badly needed, both of them, MRIs. They did not receive them. So I started checking yesterday to see if they were going to be scheduled. And they haven't been. And they won't be. Because it's a car wreck. And the insurance company says, we won't accept billing on a car wreck because it's somebody else's fault. So the clock ticks. And this is just a car wreck. I guess they let car wreck victims lay there and die instead of doing the diagnostics that they need. Thank God, or dog, or the flying spaghetti monster, or nothing at all, or the universe, whatever you prefer to thank, that they were ambulatory. But there's stuff happening that needs to be sorted out. And we live in a country where the agony, the misery, the illness, and the suffering of our fellow citizens is first and foremost a question for the profit model. And if they're not sure they can get a profit out of it, sorry, no MRI for you. If they can't make a profit out of the 20-year-old quadriplegic on a ventilator at Advocate Christ Memorial Medical Center, then they'll send him to a concrete block building in Mexico to die. That is our world. That is, you know, it makes me a little sick when Willard Romney goes around babbling on about the lyrics to America the Beautiful. He's taken to repeating them in campaign appearances. Because those lyrics he's quoting, well, what is it? Experiences cited are from testimonials. Your experiences may vary. Right. It must be mighty nice to be Willard Romney, who likes to fire people. What a monster. But don't make any mistakes. They're all monsters. John Huntsman is a monster. I've had some people suggest that I talk to Buddy Romer on the program because the former Louisiana governor is somebody that we could probably appreciate what he has to say. But I caught him this morning on that MSNBC program featuring the former congressman who may or may not have killed his beautiful young assistant, Lori Klafsudis. And in interviewing him, Romer made that statement that is just become so very telling to me. Well, we have too many regulations in America. By virtue of the fact that people here are effing dying because of a coal industry run amok, I'm saying we don't have enough regulations. I'd like to have some more, please. But the minute I heard that too many regulations language, I knew that Buddy Romer was just like the rest of them. Another profit at all costs, holy moving hand of the free market Republican. And by the way, I mentioned Willard Romney quoting the lyrics from America the Beautiful. You know who wrote that, right? It was 1894, the year that my grandmother was born, when Catherine Lee Bates wrote the lyrics to America the Beautiful. It was a couple of years before when a socialist Baptist minister wrote the Pledge of Allegiance, I pledge allegiance to the flag and to the republic for which it stands. That's pretty much the original Pledge of Allegiance. No under gods. Well, let's see. I pledge allegiance to the flag and to the republic for which it stands. One nation with liberty and justice for all. That's it. No under God. No of the United States of America. Did I mention he was a socialist? Well, guess what? Willard Romney is running around the country at present quoting a socialist poet by the name of Catherine Lee Bates. And he likes to quote all the verses of America the Beautiful. But it's the third verse that's important. When she originally penned the lyric, the third verse was as follows. America, America, God shed his grace on thee, till selfish gain no longer stain the banner of the free. I bet you could have set that to the tune of the Internationale and done right nice with it. America, America, God shed his grace on thee, till selfish gain no longer stain the banner of the free. She had to do a rewrite. That was a little strong. Remember, this is an 1894, and the Golden Age, the Gilded Age, as Mark Twain had termed it, was in full flower. So she toned down the third verse and changed it to, America, America, may God thy gold refine, till all success be nobleness, and every gain divine. The message is still there. That the greed and the avarice of the captains of industry who dominated her world were ruining it for the rest of us. By the way, she was a progressive, Catherine Lee Bates. By the way, she was. A lesbian. Anybody told Willard that yet? Because it'd be real funny if he found out. He would quit quoting it yesterday. Kind of like if you were able to tell all them conservative family values Republicans down in Alabamistan that they've got a socialist and possibly communist on the back of their state quarter, all of them would be collected and replaced with, oh, I don't know, Julia Tutwiler or something. Yeah. By the way, Kate wrote in a little bit ago. She said, in case folks want to follow up on the chemical damage we've done in Iraq, Joyce Riley will be on Coast to Coast tonight. She's been on top of this issue since the 1990s, 11 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. So that would be 2 o'clock, 2 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Kate says, on another subject, thanks to those in the audience who have ordered from Alice at Heelan Hollers. That's Heelan, H-E-A-L-I-N hyphen Hollers, H-O-L-L-E-R-S.com. Kate says, we've moved her into the realm of the international. February 14th is coming soon, says Kate. She has special stuff for y'all. And it is special indeed. Heelan Hollers, H-E-A-L-I-N hyphen Hollers.com. From the hills of the Ozarks. Kate also noting, you beat me to it. It makes me smile a little to hear those pigs quote that radical feminist dyke's poetry. They all make me want to run around the room with my dress pulled up over my head. Oh, that's right, says Kate. I don't own a dress! She does, however, have a pink Smith & Wesson revolver. Okay, not everywhere, Jeanette. We're not 8 hours from everywhere. We are not 8 hours from New Zealand. She says, I'd like to move to New Zealand. If you have any clue how I could do that with few marketable skills, disability, poor health, and no dollars, let me know. But in all seriousness, she says, I don't think that health insurance not paying for car accident-related treatment is unusual. But Agnes and Ferg should not be denied tests or treatment. You just have to tell hospital providers to bill it to your auto insurance, no fault. At least if West Virginia is the same as Minnesota, which it isn't. Jeanette closes saying, too many regulations, my ass. Oh, the New York Times has sent out a news alert. Willard Romney will win the New Hampshire GOP primary circus clown car pulling swords out of their butt act. The damn do. David in Tennessee noting, you know, Bob, in England, in France, in Germany, They have elections. Campaigning lasts like maybe 6 weeks. Then they take the oath of office and voila, that shit's in the past for 4, 5, 6 years. In the meantime, leaders and citizens take their nation forward. Here in this most worshipped of nations according to flag wavers, the campaign is never bloody over. A president elected for 4 years gets to do a little real work for 1 year, then it goes on to planning the campaign for 1 year, and then he or she must campaign the last 2 years of a term. No freaking wonder we can't find our future ass with a GPS, and both hands. And it's the truth. Ugh. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, there it is.
There he is. What's up, Jim?
What you just said, you know, the office of presidency. You know, we...
You know, I think one of the biggest mistakes that was made was putting term limits on the presidency.
I don't know, Bob. All I can say is this. We have this circus every 4 years, and then as soon as we put the man in office, we try to kill him, or, you know, it's just a no-brainer for me, or it has become.
Well, it's if you watch the Clown Car Act, it's certainly a no-brainer, because there are no brains in that act.
Well, I expected that in New Hampshire. I mean, that was, you know, that was a given.
Well, but is it going to be less of a clown car circus act in South Carolina? Because I don't think so.
Well, I don't know. There's some problems down there with dement and all that stuff, and about the deep dredging of the Charleston Harbor, because they're going to have to dredge Charleston Harbor pretty deeply in order to make it a viable and competitive port. And there's some problems down there over that. So who knows? Have you heard that story about that?
No, I hadn't heard that one. I've got a story in the stack this evening, though, that the...
they have to dredge Charleston Harbor in order to make it a viable port for the new tankers and stuff that can come in.
Well, isn't that government spending, Jim? I mean, don't they hate that?
Oh, you know how that is, Bob. Come on.
They hate it if somebody else is getting it.
Exactly. There you go.
But Charleston Harbor, that's vital to our national security.
Well, Charleston Harbor, and you're kind of getting very dear to my heart, because I spent part of my life in Charleston.
Well, that's one of the most beautiful places on this little corner of the planet.
Well, part of it is North Charleston, but if you can get past the sulfur dioxide plants and stuff like that, and I can remember the stink of that, and God only knows what that did to me. But nonetheless, let's put it this way, south abroad is very beautiful and very historic. But North Charleston, it's just like Tenafly, New Jersey in August. And if you've ever been in Tenafly, New Jersey in August and smell the wind coming across the flats, you better get a breath mask, or you better get some real powerful salves like those people who do autopsies use to put under your nose. It stinks.
Yeah, I grew up not too far from a paper mill, so it's not the same, but it ain't pretty.
They had more paper mills down there, but I mean, North Charleston was just horrible. But I digress there. Speaking of which, I was thinking about lesbian from this sequence I saw in Golden Girls.
Mm-hmm.
And you were talking about Willard Romney and quoting from a lesbian poet.
Mm-hmm.
A modern-day Sappho, I guess.
I suppose you could say that, yes. I didn't think of it in those terms, but that's why you're there, Jim. Good call.
They had an episode there where one of the girl's friends was a lesbian and had fallen in love with Betty White, and they were all whispering about it, and Blanche comes in, and she says, they tell Blanche this woman's a lesbian, and she says, lesbian. The way Rue McClanahan
lesbian?
Lesbian. Lesbian. Ain't Danny Thomas one?
Yeah, how are things in Beirut?
Well, there it is, and there you have it. So that's the only funny thing I can offer for tonight, because it always is. Let's say that we don't have very, very good news these days, do we?
Well, sometimes it's worse than others, but David in Tennessee just wrote in, Jim, and said, with regard to the geography and sense of Charleston, South Carolina, he said, having done the tourist bit there three years ago, Jim nailed it. So, yeah, you're spot on. But I was going to mention something else about South Carolina, and this can't help but come up when the candidates move down that way. So I'm sure we'll get some fresh demonization going on. The Senate committee of the South Carolina legislature just today has passed a bill that would require people laid off in South Carolina to pass a drug test in order to receive unemployment benefits, and then it would require them to volunteer for 16 hours every week with a charity or a public agency in order to keep receiving their unemployment. Now, is there any statistic out there? Is there any study that says folks who lose their jobs are automatically going to run to the guy with the and get some weed or some pills or some whatever and just lay up and not try to find work? Because that's what the Republicans like to describe it as. But it's, as far as I can understand, Jim, it's a million miles from reality.
Well, yeah, it is. I mean, it's kind of like, you know, offenders having to do public service, that type of thing, or community service. Isn't that the same thing? I mean, since when did losing one's job or becoming laid off become a crime? And for certain crimes, you have to do so many hours of community service, right?
Yeah.
Well, isn't that kind of the same thing?
Well, it's not kinda. It is.
Well, I use kinda in the gentlest terms that I know.
But what you're seeing is the evolution of a modern right-wing trend. And that trend is to treat people who have fallen on economic hard times as being criminal. It's a trend that ultimately winds up with the return of the poorhouse or the workhouse, you know, straight out of Dickens.
Oh, yeah, it is. It's very Dickensian. Absolutely. Absolutely.
And the chair of this Senate committee that passed this unemployment bill is a cat by the name of Kevin Bryant. And Kevin Bryant said, and he's a Republican from Anderson, South Carolina, and he said, it's time to start pushing back. I can't base how I vote on a bill on what some activist liberal judge is going to do, because the people had testified in front of his committee that as quick as they pass it, it'll get bounced out in federal court, because it is completely at odds with the Constitution of the United States.
I don't think these people have any real concept of the constitutionality of their thoughts.
Well, from 1840 forward, Jim, they have felt that they are a law unto themselves.
Well, that's what I'm saying. They have no sense whatsoever of reason and right. And that's what our Constitution is supposedly based on, as well as our judiciary. Reason and right. Not might, but right.
And then another right-winger, a guy named Paul Campbell from Goose Creek, said, we're not trying to be derogatory. We're trying to help them go from the unemployed to the employed ranks.
You know, I'm going to tell you a story here, and you listen to me. And I've read several accounts of this, many, many accounts of this, okay? And as Sophia would say, picture it, Russia, 1937, Joseph Stalin, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Having dinner with Stalin. Go to his DACA. He pats you on the back, tells you what a good job you're doing, tells you you better go home, and then say you leave at midnight, and guess what happens at 4 o'clock in the morning?
You die.
You got a knock on your door from the GRU or the NKVD or the OGPU. And by 7 a.m., less than 7 hours later, having left Stalin's Dacha, you're taken to the cellars of the Lubyanka, and you're shot in the back of the head.
That's about how it shook out.
Well, that's the way I see it. Now, I see things pretty much in terms of black and white. You know that. And, you know, I recommend very highly for anybody who doesn't believe that, read A Darkness at Noon by Arthur Koestler, 1940. A Darkness at Noon. And that's the way I perceive that this country is going into a situation in which we have a darkness at noon. If I can encapsulate the whole story of what's happening here, I would call it A Darkness at Noon, Revisited. Can you beat that?
Nope, I cannot. I wonder when... Well, you and I both know how the elections are going to turn out in South Carolina in 2012. The poor people.
Oh, I don't know really what's going to go on down there. I used to be able to gauge how people would think and feel down there, but you tell me, what do you think is going to happen down there?
Well, it's 2012, and there will be boatloads of money poured into ads that will run on every TV and radio station in South Carolina.
Uh huh.
And they'll talk about Christian family values. And people will vote in droves for whatever Republican or slate of Republicans are down there. Yeah, sure, Jim Clyburn will keep his seat because it's a seat that's been made safe. It's a gerrymandered sop.
He's pretty powerful down there.
Well, he's second or third in command of the House Democratic minority too.
That's right.
But meanwhile, I mean, Jesus, there's a companion bill to this bill I'm telling you about, Jim, that says if you're unemployed and you're getting unemployment benefits, you know, this is after you pass the piss test, and this is after you take the 16 hours a week of volunteer work at a charity or community service or whatever, that if you're pursuing a job that's part-time and not full-time, well, they're going to cut your check off. Because you got to look for full-time work, even if there's no full-time work to be had. And, you know, so what if you've got a master's degree in chemistry? If there's a job picking up trash in the park, you'll take that job picking up trash in the park.
That's totally different from the way it used to be with employment security in South Carolina. Because they could not make you take a job like that, and that's what they're trying to change with this new bill.
Yeah, and they're doing this fully knowing that the drug testing thing was thrown out by a federal court in Florida, which is geographically and judicially not too awfully far from South Carolina.
Well, the only hope that one can have is that it will be thrown out in South Carolina too,
and then they will, as this guy notes, this Senator Bryant, they'll hoot and holler about liberal activist judges. Not about the fact that it was a flagrant violation of the fundamental legal document that binds this nation together. And frankly, I think there's a pretty big gulf between those two.
Yes, there is. There's no question about that. I just don't understand where people's minds are going. I just don't understand it. And I've said before on this program, and I'll say it again, there is a meanness, a mean-spiritedness, and a lack of compassion, as you have noted earlier on this program, particularly with this Mexican immigrant who was taken from
Chicago
to die because of whatever. And there's just a total lack of compassion. I mean,
Understand with Mr. Jimenez at Advocate Christ Memorial Medical Center, he and his family had paid cash for as long as they could, but once the cash ran out, it was deportation time, Jim. Does that just floor you?
Yes and no. Yes, it does, but no, I'm not surprised. Nothing inhumane, lacking in compassion, or lacking in reason in today's world really floors me anymore. And I think it's gotten to the point that there's some type of, I don't know what to say it.
It's time that the rest of the world at least...
There's some type of political and social xylocaine or novocaine that's being spread over any surface of compassion that may have once existed in this country.
And the nerve endings are dead.
Exactly. I mean, the nerve endings are dead. And unlike with novocaine and xylocaine, where you regain feeling, but I'm afraid with...
This is not wearing off, Jim.
It doesn't wear off. And, you know, once people see this kind of stuff, and, you know, we've seen this stuff happen before. We've seen it happen in Europe 70 years ago. I mean, we've seen all this happen before. We really have. And that's the reason I say nothing surprises me. And I'm seeing, another cyclical repeat of historical inevitability.
Well, do you suppose if the census data indicates, Jim, that the demographics in this country are going, well, I mean, they already are, but they are going to be changed dramatically in the next 20 to 30 years. Will we see a pendulum swing back then to some degree of humane idea of the United States, or will the people in power have completely burnt this country to a cinder to make sure that there's nothing left for that changing demographic to have?
Well, I would think that it is inimical to their interests, the ones whom you just mentioned, to see that demographic change. And that is the reason they don't want that to happen.
Yeah, they're trying to take it all before that happens.
Well, what they're trying to do is to eliminate those sections of the population which they feel are inimical to their interests.
I mean, how do all these moneyed, privileged white folks plan to hang on to power when they are a minority in this country in 30 years?
Well, they don't want that to happen, Bob, and they see that.
So, are you suggesting that we're seeing the first baby steps of some sort of ethnic cleansing?
I've used that word before, Bob. Remember the other night when we talked about the situation with the poor and the disadvantaged and the unwashed? They don't want those people to survive. Those people have no real purpose in their scheme of things, in my humble opinion. I may be wrong, but I don't think so.
You know, Jim, David in Tennessee just wrote in and he said, "Where are the minds of the nation going?" He said, "Well, dear cyber friend, when the rats increase in number, but the maze gets no bigger, and the food pellets are fewer, we rats in said maze become irrational." And David says, "Seriously, is that not the state of our union?"
Well, I mean, you have to look at it this way, and you have to think like they think, okay? Like Sun Tzu once said in The Art of War, you must think the way your enemy's thinking, or your adversary. It is not in their best interest for minorities or the people to whom you are referring who could make this pendulum swing toward whatever to gain ascendancy. It simply isn't. They don't want that to happen. Now, where in history do we have a precedence for this type of thinking? I ask you. Where?
Well, I think I know the place we're both going to go, and I think there's even more than that. But the question is, when you get there, how do you break it? Because I don't think that paradigm necessarily. You know, that's the part of the paradigm that doesn't apply.
The simplest thing is this. It's, you don't allow a sapling to grow that could become a tree. I mean, this is the type of reasoning that was used by Henry VIII toward his enemies, the Plantagenets, when he put them in the tower. Okay?
Yeah.
That's exactly what he did. And this is the type of reasoning that was used when they killed babies and children in Auschwitz. Why should we spare the children? Well, they're going to grow up and they're going to hate us all the more for having killed their parents. So, we have to cut it off at the root.
Yeah, and that, of course, takes us back to the 19th century and Colonel Chivington in Colorado and that infamous statement, kill them all, nits make lice.
Well, that's the reason I used the term ethnic cleansing last week in one of our conversations. And you can refer back to that if you want to. I don't like to refer back to it because it makes my blood run cold. And it's just gotten to the point that there is a type, you know, there are all types of ways to cut the sapling off before it becomes a tree. And I think that's the ambition and the objective of a number of types of people who are in the upper echelons of our financial society. They don't want a number of rats to grow. I mean, if you've ever seen that Nazi propaganda film, The Eternal Jew, that's exactly what they used in that propaganda film. They portrayed Jews as rats and vermin.
Oh, yeah.
You know, rats in the maze or vermins in the larder. And that was the reasoning that...
Well, and that's, you know, that's the reason the...
Lucian.
A sick freak like Michael Savage constantly refers to liberals and progressives as precisely that, vermin.
Well, I think he probably refers to anybody who doesn't particularly agree with everything he says and who isn't making X number of dollars a year. I mean, it has become almost a crime in this country not to make over $100,000 a year. And if you don't, then you are looked upon as some type of untermensch or subhuman.
Well, you know, I do find it interesting that we are talking in terms of rats and mazes in an election season where the lead candidate is named Willard.
Yeah.
Maybe, you know, maybe the universe is taking care of its own little, I don't know, is it Schadenfreude? Or is it...
That's an interesting term, too, Schadenfreude. Yeah.
Yeah. Or is some sort of Zeitgeist? The Germans came up with all the good ones.
You know, Zeitgeist or time spirit, whatever you want to use. I mean, German can be a very precise language. And
well, if they don't have a noun for something, they'll cobble a few together and come up with one.
Yeah, yeah, and 26 consonants or whatever. But nonetheless, excuse me, it would just appear to me if that's the general attitude of people, is that if you do not have wealth or if you do not have means or resource, that is a crime. That is. A type of unforgivable and unpardonable sin.
Well, and let me take us a couple of other places as well, Jim, because it all kind of plays into the. And maybe this is what I'm on about, sort of. The world has always been. I forget which philosopher was it that coined the term nasty, brutish, and short. Was it Hume? I can't remember.
I can't either.
But he referred to people living lives that were nasty, brutish, and short. And there's a certain element in the power elite in the global structure, not just the national structure, that thinks that that's just fine. And then, what was it? Most men lead lives of quiet desperation. There's another one. Or most people.
It's a very Hobbesian way of looking at life.
Yeah, maybe it was Hobbes. That sounds like Hobbes. I think you're right.
That brought it to mind, yes. Absolutely. Hobbesian, yes.
We'll step beyond the bounds of... I was going to save this for tomorrow, but this is equally appropriate during this conversation. We will step beyond the bounds of the United States itself and look over to Rome real quick. I don't know if you caught this or not, but His Holiness gave his New Year's address to the diplomatic corps. It's one of those things he has to do every year. And faced with the problems that the world is, His Holiness, Jim, said that the thing that really bothered him the most was gay marriage. And that gay marriage undermines the future. Get this, Jim, get this. You might have to strap down for this. Gay marriage undermines the future of humanity itself.
Well, are you surprised? No.
I wish I was.
But I'm not.
But how does an institution maintain structural integrity with lunatic pronouncements like this?
Oh, it's easy. It goes back to... I mean, if you want to go back through the papacy, look at Leo the Tenth. And guess who popped up during the pontificate of Leo the Tenth? Martin Luther. Okay?
Yeah.
Now, Martin Luther was the... And by the way, on...
Didn't Leo the Tenth refer to Martin Luther as some damn drunk potato-eating monk?
No, he may have. He probably had a lot more to say about Luther than that, because Luther is the one who... Well, Luther was a very dedicated Catholic at one time, and when he was in a monastery, he was so trying to, I would say, to mortify his own flesh that he would spend the night in the snow, and those fellow monks would have to drag him out because he would die, he'd freeze to death. And then he and another fellow had a pilgrimage to Rome during the pontificate of the predecessor of Leo the Tenth. It may have been Clement the Seventh. I used to know my popes real well, but I don't anymore. I'm sorry about that. I'm getting too old, Bob. Let's face it.
Well, you know, if as you age, Jim, a pope or two falls by the wayside, I still think you probably know more along those lines than most people. You've forgotten more than most people know, and I mean that as a compliment.
Well, thank you. And I'm more than just a half historian, okay?
Oh. You're not an amateur paleontologist like Newt Gingrich, Jim?
Bitch. But nonetheless, you know, Luther, when he and his friend went to to Rome and observed the carryings on of the papacy of Leo the Tenth, and I think he may have been one of the Borgia popes, and I'm not sure about that. But nonetheless, he became so disenchanted with the papacy that he went back. And he began to think, you know, this isn't right. How could a man who hunts wild boar and sires bastard children and lives outside canon law hold the keys to the kingdom? And then eventually began to write his 99 or how many, 95 theses. And then, of course, you know, there were people who began to, because of the printing press, read what Luther had to say. Now, Luther was no great compassionate person. He hated Jews. Oh, my God, Hitler even used some of Luther's teachings to support his own thing. But, I mean, Luther really had a falling out with the papacy. And there begun in 1621... the beginnings of the Reformation, and, you know, they begin to try to examine, you know, what was wrong. And there were a lot of people who agreed with what Luther had to say, for political reasons. I mean, during that particular time, you had Charles V as the Holy Roman Emperor, okay? And, of course, that was the Holy Roman Empire, which was, in my opinion, neither Holy Roman nor really empire. But, I mean,
right.
They had the Diet of Worms, in which Luther, you know, was supposedly tried. And, of course, Luther had a benefactor, Frederick the Wise, who said, you know, I'm not going to let these guys kill him, because by that time a papal bull of excommunication had been issued and the agents of Leo the Tenth were out to kill Luther, and if not then, just drag him back to Rome where he could be burned to death. But nonetheless, I mean, the papacy itself, this is my point, it still was a lot of bad stuff. And a lot of people who made bad...
A whole bunch of bad karma over the course of 2,000 years.
As much as I have respect in certain ways for certain elements of the Catholic Church, I mean, what Luther did was he reduced the number of sacraments from 7 to 2. And, of course, that left a lot of middlemen...
out in the cold.
...for salvation. And that's what happened there. It was a very good program about Martin Luther on ETV, and I was so glad to see that.
And by the way, Kate just wrote in, Jim, and she said, yeah, it was Hobbes who said nasty, brutish, and short. And then she said, gay marriage will destroy the human race. Gee, we had enough power to take down the towers, and now we're going to take down the human race. That about gives me the vapors. She said, marriage? Does shacking up count? Well, sadly, yes, because the church isn't too keen on shacking up, neither.
Well, no, they're not. But, you know, as far as gay marriage destroying the future of the human race, I think it's going to be the opposite. It'll probably destroy the human race, and that's the overpopulation of the planet.
Well, there is that, and that plays into the church's little hang-up about not putting any little latex thingies on anyone's John Thomas.
Of you know, IUDs or no types of morning after pill and stuff like that.
Right, and we see the fruit of that assault, for instance, last night in the story coming out of Mesquite, Texas, about that CVS pharmacy.
That's just absolutely nuts. I mean, you know, good God.
But I guess the point is, Jim, these shock troops are on the move. You know, Timothy Dolan next month will become a cardinal, and he has literally penned a threatening letter to the President of the United States over gay marriage. I don't know if you're aware of this or not.
No, I'm not.
He wrote to Barack Obama saying that the Obama administration's refusal to defend an anti-gay marriage ban could, and these are his words, precipitate a national conflict between church and state of enormous proportions. In my book, coming from a guy who's about to be a cardinal, Jim, that's a threat.
Well, he better watch his ass, because he might not have a head to put that red hat on.
I mean, that's...
Follow what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do.
I mean, you know, this country was based upon separation of church and state. I mean, I have my own personal feelings about the church and the See of Rome and things like that. We've talked about that.
But this is a guy saying that he is openly inimical to the separation of church and state.
This we cannot have.
That's treasonous conduct, isn't it, Jim?
Well, in my opinion, it is, and we cannot have that. I mean,
doesn't the Constitution speak in terms of levying war on the state of on the United States? Isn't that a threat to do exactly that?
Well, it's a veiled threat, and he's trying to make intimations toward that particular issue. But, I mean, you know, and I'm not going to try to jump from one thing to the other needlessly, but nonetheless, it could be construed if that's the way you perceive it. But for a man to say something like that, I mean...
And a prince of the church. You know, this isn't just some prattling vicar.
Well, yeah, exactly, a prince of the church. But, I mean, princes of the church have been... Well, let's put it this way, in the days of Henry VIII... He dealt with the princes of the church, did he not?
Yes, he did.
As a matter of fact, if it weren't for Henry VIII...
Well, it was the final score wound up Henry VIII, several, princes of the church, nothing.
I wouldn't have my own church. because he basically founded the church to which.
Well, and that's the other part. Now that you know the now the papacy is openly trying to raid the Church of England.
That's
part and parcel of it. This business of inviting homophobic Anglicans. They have literally set up a parallel structure within the Catholic Church to welcome homophobic Anglicans
back into the fold. I see.
It allows them to keep some of the Anglican traditions. And I guess, let's see, the word for it is an ordinariate. And it's similar to a diocese. And they've set them up in Britain and the U.S. to oversee former Anglicans, homophobic Anglicans, who convert back to Roman Catholicism. And I don't know, they pass out the Lodge High sign or something.
That doctrinally isn't going to work. But look, we're almost at the end of our time.
Yeah, we got to get out of here.
And thank you, and have a good evening.
All right, Jim, thank you very kindly. I appreciate the conversation.
Yes, sir.
Bye now. That's our buddy Jim. And it is time to roll on out of here. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this happen. Thank you to our volunteers in the chat room, Lottie and Sparky, our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you to our blogger, Texas Betsy, our op-ed columnist, Reverbo, my head writer, David in Tennessee. Thank you to John Fox, who has been right busy of late. He does a lot of amazing stuff, John does. And also to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Everything you hear on the horn happens because of Ben Birch and the White Rose Society. Thanks to those who contribute to keep the show going. Nothing rolling in this evening, but hopefully that'll change in the next 24 hours, and I won't have to say that again tomorrow night. Thank you, and thank you. And thanks, of course, always to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. When you hear me talking about the ongoing struggle to stop the poisoning, to stop the killing here in Appalachia, what you're hearing me talk about is the tireless work of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you.